All right, welcome back to the Dungeon of Doom. I'm Kai Mikey, Lions beat writer for MLive, joined as always by Ben Raven. Ben, it is draft week, finally. I feel like we've been burning the midnight oil for, I don't know, maybe not as long as some years because of the playoff run, but I feel like all I've done for, you know, hundreds of hours is look at draft prospects, read about them, watch their film, read mock drafts, none of which are going to be right. And finally, at last, the week is here. How you feeling as we kind of cross the finish line here this week?
It really is a double-edged sword. You're like, hooray, it's finally here. We're going to put this behind us. And then you remember what this week looks like, and then you remember what Thursday, Friday, and Saturday entails. And don't get me wrong, there are high moments on that process, but these are three sleepless nights, three tireless just grinding the gears mornings, really looking forward to the event happening, obviously looking forward to seeing what goes on in Detroit at the draft. But yeah, I can't wait to put this behind us and get back to NFL football.
I mean, the draft itself, covering it, those long nights, and it's going to be long this year with all the late picks in each of the rounds. But, you know, I don't mind it. Like, I mean, it's hard work, but like, this is the fun part for me. Like when we go into Allen Park and it's a couple hours before first round and we're eating pizza and we're talking to people and there's a buzz in the air. I like that shit. It's like the months of my life that I've given to the draft process, like uncovering every stone in a guy's life, a guy who's never going to play in Detroit 9 times out of 10. It's just a grueling process. And I did, you know, we both did our mock drafts and we'll get to those in a bit. And then we'll get to interview with Jared Goff on the back end, which I'm pretty excited about. But, you know, it like the mock draft thing is a grueling process. And I won't miss not doing it for the next year.
Yeah, I mean, we're putting our names directly on that. You're picking for 31 teams you don't cover. You're picking 32 guys you like didn't cover. Like, so like it's a big undertaking and you're putting your name on it and you want it to be as perfect as possible. And then when the event is done, it's laughable how wrong you were. So for sure.
Every year, you know, I mean, I've nailed the Lions pick a few times. I think we all had Jeff Okuda, I had Aiden Hutchinson, you know, the Penei Sewell year, I had them taking Justin Fields, but I also said that was because I didn't think that they had a quarterback in Jared Goff, but if they didn't take a quarterback in that draft, that it would be Penei. We all thought it was going to be Devon Witherspoon last year, and it was going to be Devon Witherspoon until Seattle took Devon Witherspoon, the you know, one spot before Detroit. We have, I think, some sense of the Lions' thinking, but still they can surprise you. I think we saw that last year too with the trade for Jahmyr Gibbs, which they moved back and took him. That was a big surprise. But even if they took Witherspoon at number 6, they were still going to try to trade back up to take Gibbs too. Like, they were pretty set on getting that guy. And that's something none of us saw coming. So you never really, like, even though, Ben, you and I, as much as anyone, understand like what the Lions' thinking is, what they like, what they don't like, what their process is, and we can kind of formulate, okay, here's maybe the way they'll wade through round one. Ultimately, none of us know anything. And we're going to be reminded of that every year. We're going to look real dumb with these mock drafts because they're never right.
No, and it's just like Gibbs and Campbell, they weren't in my first round of my final mock last year. I don't think they were in too many people's, you know? I think last year was... So it's just like that. It takes one team taking a guy early. It takes one trade to completely shake up the board. And I think as we kind of get into the later years of these like COVID eligibility years, the older the prospects get, and then you look at the younger prospects in that pool, I think there are going to be more surprises this year and at least for next year too, because it has opened up kind of a new world in the NFL draft. So it's tougher to pinpoint than ever, for sure.
Let's dive in, shall we? We got a great, I mean, it's a big week, the draft's in Detroit. I was biking around downtown the other day. It was really something to see downtown. They have the whole area around Campus Martius blocked off, and you could see the big draft center that they've built downtown Detroit. I mean, it feels like a festival this week, like almost like a holiday in Detroit. You can kind of feel it. And we got a big episode on tap previewing this draft in Detroit. We got our mocks today that we're going to talk about. And then, like I said before, on the back end, we'll have an interview with none other than Jared Goff, QB1 in Detroit for now and maybe for...
Jared Goff.
I'll have to ask him about that. We're recording this earlier in the day. I'm talking to him in a little bit. So maybe I'll have to sneak in a... Because I wrote about this the other day, Ben, but can you imagine, pick one, Caleb Williams, quarterback, USC, and there's a chant of Jared Goff, like, overpowering everything. Like, I think that's a real possibility that happens.
Yeah, that's a great point. I did not think about that. That feels like a real strong possibility, those first three or four quarterback picks.
I'll have to try to sync that one in. All right, to our mock drafts, Ben. I don't know how, we're just kind of winging this. I don't know how you want to do this, but maybe we can go through yours first, and then get to mine after that. So I'm looking at it right now. We have Chalk, you and I, at number one with Caleb Williams. And I think, pretty universally, like, that guy's going number one. It kind of reminds me of the Goff thing from 2016, where everyone knew what the pick was going to be, including Goff, who was told by Jeff Fisher about a week before that draft he would be the guy. I think everyone expects quarterback at picks 2 and 3, although you and I differ. I have Jaden Daniels at number two to Washington, and you have Drake May. Do you want to just explain maybe real quickly why you preferred May to Washington over Jaden Daniels?
I think he's more of a complete package, and I think he's got a little higher ceiling to his game too. I really like Drake May's build, tall, sturdy guy, and I also like his aggressiveness and his ability to throw it downfield, and I think he has honed in that aggressiveness. Well, Jaden Daniels, love his game, love his dual threat ability. I think he's a little on the thin frame, and I think we know what he is as a passer, where I think getting May in an NFL offense could unlock a little more there, but... It was a lot closer than I thought it was going to be 2 months ago, because you can really make a good argument for both of those guys.
You can. And again, we're not in the Washington war room. We're not in, certainly not in New England's war room. If I get snipered or something.
We're banned.
Yeah. But I have Jaden Daniels. I think he has higher upside. I like the mobility. It kind of fits where the game is going. I think having transferred in from Arizona State, like, he had an incredible year last year, but I just think there's meat on the bone still with him. And he has really nice accuracy. Like, I like him as a thrower too. And and he's a bit raw. Like, he's definitely not a finished product. I think he would benefit greatly from not playing right away. But yeah, I mean, it's a coin flip. I kind of went with Jaden Daniels for those reasons. I also think he's a very good fit for Cliff Kingsbury, the new OC in Washington. I know everyone wants to hear about the Lions picks. We won't go, we won't labor too much through our mocks. You can find those on MLive. But I guess one thing I wanted to broach, Ben, was the JJ McCarthy thing, which a lot of people around here are familiar with JJ, what he did at Michigan. I think you and I both love his game. He's a little unproven given how much Michigan didn't have to lean on him because of the running game and all that. But the skills are there, and he's such a good skilled passer. I mean, he was like a top five recruit in the country coming out of high school. And with how much demand there is for quarterbacks in the league, which I feel like we talk about this every year, a guy like JJ McCarthy, who might be the 10th or 15th best prospect on a big board, he's probably going to go fourth, fifth, or certainly somewhere in the top 11. So you have him, let's see.
Eight via trade. Yep.
You have him at 8 via trade with Minnesota. I had him at 4 via trade with Arizona. You have Arizona taking Marvin Harrison at number 4. I have Arizona dealing the pick to Minnesota so the Vikings can take JJ McCarthy. I guess, why did you think Arizona is going to stay on that pick and McCarthy will go later in the round?
Marvin Harrison Jr. to me is the best overall prospect in this class by kind of a great deal. I think he is going to be an instant impact, an instant wide receiver one. And I think the Cardinals showed that they're more ahead of schedule than a lot of people thought they were going to be last year under Jonathan Gannon. And I think them having 2 first round picks, obviously that's more flexibility. If you can add more to that situation, do it. But I think you've got Kyler Murray healthy again, showing signs of life down the line last season, and a chance to immediately insert a wide receiver run who is tall, who plays like a 5'10" guy, but also plays like a 6'8" guy at the same time. Like, I just think the prospect of getting Harrison Jr. in that Arizona offense, an offense that needs a little boost to it after losing Hollywood Brown. That's how you take that thing forward. They already got their franchise quarterback in place, it seems. I understand you could cash in there, but I do think Harrison is the prospect worth staying put for.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that. Marvin Harrison is unbelievable. I just think the opportunity with Arizona to move back. Like, listen, I mean, Denver's also going to try to trade up. That's why I have the trade happening at 4 rather than later in the round. Because I think, listen, Sean Payton in Denver, that guy did not come out of retirement to coach what was left of Russell Wilson, what's left of Zach Wilson. I mean, that guy did not come out of retirement to get his face beat in with the worst quarterback room in the league. Like, clearly Denver's going to do something. They're desperate. I think Sean Payton's going to be desperate to land his guy. And then you have Minnesota, which also needs a quarterback and already made a trade to pick up a first round pick later in the round. And I think we'll have the ammunition to outbid Denver to get JJ McCarthy at number 4. I just think there's going to be such competition, an arms race, if you will, for the number 4 pick. Arizona is going to get splashed with a lot of compensation. And ultimately, yeah, having Marvin Harrison would be awesome. I think having like teams bid for your pick and outspend for your pick and picking up bullets for a relatively new regime to continue to build is the best path forward. I've got Arizona picking up pick 23 in that deal. They pick also at number 11 and number 28. And in my mock, Ben, I have them taking the top corner in the draft, Quinyon Mitchell. I have them taking one of the best pass rushers in the league in the draft in Chop Robinson, and then still getting their receiver in the back part of the round at number 27 with A.D. Mitchell out of Texas. So yeah, like obviously I'd rather have Marvin Harrison than A.D. Mitchell, but A.D. Mitchell's a wide receiver one kind of prospect, big guy, gets behind a defense, all that kind of stuff. And then you also add a guy who can get after the quarterback in Chop Robinson and a guy who can defend the pass in Quinyon Mitchell. I just think that's a huge leap for the Arizona Cardinals. And that's kind of what I have that breaking down in the top 10. I know folks aren't here to listen about the Arizona Cardinals. So let's fast forward to pick 29. You're dying in your chair right now. It's great. So let's go to 29 in the Lions. I'm going to spoil the thing right here and tell everyone you've got the Lions taking Chop Robinson. I guess, and again, I have him going a little bit earlier in the round, but I think he's a great fit. We both talked to him at the combine. You could kind of feel the Lions-ness in the way that he talked, his demeanor, his IQ, and that the physical attributes are freaky. Maybe the production wasn't always there, but he had a high pass rush win rate. I don't think there's much doubt that he'll be able to win on the pass rush at the next level. So I guess, Ben, as you weighed all the pros and cons and maybe even trades up or trades down, why did you ultimately land on Chop Robinson, the edge rusher out of Penn State?
I just think the type of new flavor that he could bring to that rotation and what would be asked out of him in year one would kind of be a perfect situation. And I also love the coaches that he would fall in with, you know, Kelvin Shepard working with the pass rushers a little bit, Terrell Williams, who is going to be a hard-nosed defensive line coach. And Chop Robinson needs that a little bit because he is not a complete prospect. Like there is a reason he might be there at pick 29, but in terms of high upside traits and guys having stuff that you cannot teach, there are not guys built like him who play that position, who get off the line like he does, sustain that speed and be able to add a bunch of like spin moves and get under guys. Like his ability, he's a bottle rocket. He is an absolute bottle rocket, and he's not the all around kind of inside outside versatile player that the Lions have kind of stocked their defensive line and their edge rusher room with, but that's okay to me. You know, on paper, he doesn't look like a fit for what they want to be about, but I argue that he unlocks more potential for them to use those inside out guys even more. That gives you more potential for rotations on the defensive line. I mean, when I mocked that Chop pick, I just thought of this defensive rotation of, oh my God, you might see like a Reader Hutchinson inside with Chop Robinson and James Houston on the outside. Good freaking luck with that. Like it just gives them so much interchangeability on the defensive line. And I really do think they need to find something specifically for the pass rusher. Chop Robinson is a pure pass rusher, and that's okay because they need that. I mean, it was a one-person show. Hutch had 88 more pressures than the next closest edge defender on that roster last season. That's not okay. So I think he could be there because of some of the holes in his game and some of the issues with his size and his run defending, but the willingness, the personality, and just the unteachable traits are there for me.
I hear you. The need is certainly there, and not that the Lions draft in round one for need. They really don't. They took Jahmyr Gibbs last year when they had DeAndre Swift. They're clearly not drafting for need. They're taking the best players possible and then making it work. And we saw that too with Brian Branch, even in round two last year. Where they already had CJ Gardner-Johnson that they had landed in free agency, but they're like, screw it. Like, we think Brian Branch is a round one guy. It's pick 45. Let's go up and get him and make it work. And can you imagine this defense without Brian Branch at this point? I mean, he's like one of the stars of the future. And that shows, I think, the benefits of doing a best player available kind of approach. And I think if Chop Robinson were available at 29, he would most certainly be in that conversation as best player available. He'd be at a premium position. Now, as you outlined very eloquently, Ben, it's a position where they had nothing beyond Aiden Hutchinson last year. I think the thing that weighs against the pick for me is production. Mm-hmm. And again, the pass rush win rate was there. He had a lot of pressures, but in terms of conversions to sacks, maybe not so. And I always question that with pass rushers in college. Like, if you're this gifted, if you're an elite pass rush kind of prospect for the NFL, why weren't you getting sacks against 19-year-olds, you know? And we kind of saw that with Aiden Hutchinson. You know, that's kind of like maybe the blueprint we have for a Lions pass rusher in the draft. Like, he was so productive. The motor was there, the sack production was there, the pressures were there. With Robinson, it's you're kind of drafting traits. The dude is a freak. I mean, the way he can jump, the explosion, the run, the speed to power conversion that you see from him is just it's a freak show. But why wasn't he more productive as a pass rusher? I guess, how did you weigh this out with that pick?
You know, it was obviously a topic on my head because I think I spent about 12 weeks of last season writing about Hutchinson's pressures but not being able to turn those into sacks. So I think the Lions are kind of well-versed on what they're looking for. All right, this guy isn't getting sacks, but is he at least putting himself in position to where if things go right, he's going to start getting those sacks? So I do think that the Lions are better suited to kind of judge that, to see those pass rushing, to see if it's effective, to see how to work on that, to see how to get them home. Because I mean, Hutch was not getting those sacks the first like 13, 14 weeks of the season until they started manufacturing ways to get them home. So I do think this defensive staff, they're not hung up on sacks. Obviously you want production, especially at the college level, especially in a first round pick, but I do think there's enough meat on the bone and just like that pass rush win rate and just his ability to get home. I think there's, and he's not just this one trick pony either. Like, there's a real willingness to set the edge. And I think that goes a long way for somebody who's so good at one trait, but is just so willing to be that all around player that you need. So it was kind of enough to mask the production concerns because it was solid production, but it's not, when you look at his relative athletic score, you're like, holy crap, did this guy have like 28 sacks in the Big Ten last season against Northwestern's offensive tackles? And it's like, no, I wonder what happened there. So I think there's enough to work with. I think there's going to be more than enough ways to find ways to get this kid home.
Sticking with the pass rush for just a moment, one thing I found very interesting about your mock draft, you have Jared Verse out of Florida State going 25. I already moved away from my mock, but I had him going like in the top 15 picks in my mock. I think people pretty universally think he's in that range. And then you have Latu, the kid out of UCLA, going 27th. And for me, Latu is like a top 15 talent for sure, maybe even top 10. But obviously the medical thing is a huge concern with him. He was forced into medical retirement while at Washington because of a neck injury, was eventually cleared to play again at UCLA and was tremendous. So you're kind of weighing the injury risk there. And, you know, we cover Brad Holmes. We are very well aware of that guy's penchant for exploiting other teams' unwillingness to take on injury risks. And we asked him about that a little bit at the owners' meetings a couple of weeks ago. And he it never turned into a story. I started writing one, but like just hearing Brad Holmes talk about why, like, he took exception basically to even the term injury risk because he says everyone gets hurt, that if you're not, you know, you're ruling out guys just because they got hurt in the past, you're going to give up on having a shot at the best players possible when you know, anyone can get hurt. And I think he has some point to it, although it has backfired also with Levi Enzuike, for example. But he's clearly more aggressive when it comes to the injury risk. And I think if a top 15 talent, let's say in Latu, gets to 27th, which is where you have him.
Yeah.
Ben, I'm going to be real with you. Like, I think the Lions would be looking to move up to get Latu or even Jared Verse at 25 versus sitting back and taking Chop Robinson at 29. I think Verse and Latu are both better fits, more explosive players, higher ceilings for this team, and you wouldn't have to give up that much to move up 3, 4, 5 picks.
You know, for me, I've got Johnny Newton top 15. I've got Byron Murphy top 20. For me, the top two interior guys, I would rather have both of those guys than edge two and edge three in this year's draft. It's just kind of, I look at Jared Verse, I'm always a little wary of guys who win with power. Now, I understand he's kind of a freak power athlete, but I'm always a little wary of guys' effectiveness at the next level when they're just beating teenagers and younger kids in college with raw power. And with Latu, I mean, it's part injury and it's part just kind of, you know, I don't know. When medically retired from a neck injury, I think that does kind of lower him just automatically in my head. I mean, he is someone I looked into. Heck, I saw him play in person last year at one of the most disgusting football games I ever went to in my life, UCLA and Arizona State. And he was the best player on the field at times.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Verse fell because I'm always wary of guys who win with power at the college level, how that's going to translate, how long you're going to take to catch up. And just Latu, it was medically retired from neck injury. Like, I think he's no doubt first round pick, but I do think when you start weighing that against someone like a Byron Murphy or a Johnny Newton, who led all interior defenders and pressures over the last 2 years by a mile, I think, you know, age, medical history, Brad Holmes' cake is another guy's garbage. You know, I kind of, you know, it's that, so that was my thinking there.
Yeah, makes sense. It's hard. I mean, I think Chop Robinson would be a great fit. I mean, I have him going a few spots earlier to Arizona in my mock at 24. So I think he's a quality player. In my mock, Ben, I went a different direction. I went with Jackson Powers Johnson, the center out of Oregon. Yes, an interior offensive lineman. I'm sure that's going to be a sexy pick with 100,000 people in the streets of Detroit on Thursday night. It might be the only thing worse than trading back if you're Brad Holmes in terms of like your popularity with the fans. Right. You know? But like, man, in terms of winning football games, that is a sexy pick to me. You know, it's not a splashy headline. They're not getting a big time pass catcher or whatever. But listen. You win football games in the trenches. Everyone says it. Some actually believe it and do it. The Lions are one of those teams. You know, when they were pinching pennies in the first days of this regime, you know, 1 year contracts, vet minimums for every guy they signed, basically, they gave a record setting extension to Frank Ragnow. And Frank Ragnow at that time had 2 years left on his deal. Like, they're putting the money where their mouth is. Mm-hmm. They go into the first draft. They could go any number of directions. I know they were really high on Ja'Marr Chase. But once he was gone, they went with Penei Sewell. And they were, like, bear hugging in the war room because they got their big daddy for the front of this offense. And with Ragnow secured, Sewell, some of the the pre-existing guys who are already here, they have one of the best offensive lines in the league. And for as much as we love celebrating Jahmyr Gibbs, Amon-Ra St. Brown, heck, the rebirth of Jared Goff, none of that stuff happens without having the strength they do on the offensive line. That's where it starts. That's the identity of this, not just the team, but the offense in particular. It's how Ben Johnson designs this offense. He said before, he's got pages of his playbook that no other team does because you have Penei Sewell right tackle and doing things that no one else can do. That's the value of building in the offensive line. So while, yes, they need a corner, yes, they could use edge help in the pass rush. I mean, they really need to defend the pass to get after the quarterback better than they did last year. They have shown throughout the Brad Holmes regime that they're not drafting for need in the first round. And with what they've done in free agency and trading for Carlton Davis, signing Amik Robertson, going and getting a Marcus Davenport, you know, even signing Kevin Zeitler for the offensive line, they've opened up their board to do whatever the hell they want at 29. That's a good spot to be in when you're picking that late in the draft. And with the way my board fell, all the corners I would have taken at 29 were off the board. I even considered a trade up for Terrion Arnold, Ben, and maybe we can get to that in a second. Because that's something I labored through that decision for hours. I'm not joking, hours. I was just staring at my screen, crunching numbers on trade charts, like figuring out the likelihood that would eventually happen. But with them staying on the pick, the value was in Jackson Powers Johnson, who I think is one of the best offensive linemen in this draft, one of the best players in this draft. He fits what they do culturally as a tough, hard-nosed, physical people mover up front. He was good in the run game. He allowed one pressure in his career at Oregon, not sack, pressure. And he did it while playing left guard in a limited way, right guard for an entire season, and then moving to center in his final season at Oregon. And in his one season at center, he was named the best player at that position in the entire country. This guy has positional versatility, toughness, production, experience. He's the culture fit they're looking for. And he, in a practical sense, Ben, he could back up any of the interior positions in year one, which is a nice thing to have when you have a guy like Frank Ragnow with an inoperable toe condition. You have Kevin Zeitler on a one-year deal. There's some like long-term things going on the interior of the offensive line. Jackson Powers Johnson could plug in wherever you want him as a backup in year one, as a starter in year two. It would just keep this offense and its identity on track. And I think that the value of doing that, of feeding that beast, of keeping this thing moving forward, of keeping the line strong, dominant up front for an offense that's built around it. There's a hell of a lot of value in that, even if you're doing it at the expense of taking a corner or an edge rusher.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people have a problem with, oh, you're drafting somebody who's not going to contribute right away in year one. It's like, y'all remember Big V emerged from training camp as the guard starter last year? Like, offensive line injuries happen often and frequently. Zeitler's here in a one-year deal. Like we said, Graham Glasgow is on the other side of 30. Frank Ragnow's had a hellacious 3 years. I mean, this is an opportunity to really let Frank take those days in practice off that he needs while getting a rookie as many reps as possible at any of those spots on the offensive line. Like, the interior offensive line is great here in Detroit, but it's older, less long-term stability, and there are legit injury concerns in the middle. Like Frank Ragnow, he's a warrior among humans, but he is human at the end of the day. And you just, anything you can do to keep that dude on his feet or anything you can do to keep this offensive line moving forward is smart. So Jackson Powers Johnson is in that Cooper DeJean class for me of like those maybe middle round, first round picks guys. If they're there at 29, that's the pick. Like one of those, like so I feel that too, because I love the player. I love the versatility, and Brad Holmes knows that Oregon offensive line pretty freaking well.
If Cooper DeJean is there at 29, Brad Holmes is going to get fined for running that pick to the podium so quickly.
Exactly.
He's going way earlier in mine. I think I have him at, I don't know, it's not in front of me. I think it's 22. But yeah. Like he, 22 to Philly. Yeah, and if he doesn't go to 22 to Philly, he's not making it past Green Bay at 25. That seems like a layup if he's there. For a million reasons that we don't have to get into. If you happen to be there 29, he's the pick. Terrion Arnold, Kool-Aid McKinstry, if he's there at 29, I would take him over Jackson Powers Johnson. Like,
I agree.
The Lions don't draft for need, but they do have a realistic need at outside cornerback, and all those guys would be day one starters at that position and really quality players of a similar caliber to Jackson Powers Johnson. With those guys all off the board in my mock, I just found more value going with the offensive line. And even the defensive line was a little bit depleted when I made the pick, Ben. Maybe the one guy I really considered was, Johnny Newton was there. I just don't think they would go that direction at 29. And Darius Robinson, who I'd falling out of the first round, actually, in my latest mock. I think he'd be a good player and a good fit. I think I'd like him a lot more, like, you know, with a trade up to like 35 or 40 than I would like him at, you know, at 29. So yeah, that's the direction that I went. I considered more heavily, as I said before, a trade. Ben, I'm not kidding, man. I spent four hours just thinking about this is what I want to happen. I think it will happen. If Terrion Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell, but I had Mitchell going 11. He's my cornerback one. And then there was a run on offensive lineman in my mock. And so Terry and Arnold got to 15. If Terry and Arnold gets to 15 or beyond, Brad Holmes is going to be on the bat phone making calls, guaranteed. That guy is so good. You know, he's pretty athletic. I think his game speed is a little bit faster than his you know, stopwatch speed, kind of like a Brian Branch. You know, Brian Branch fell a little bit last year as a really quality Alabama defensive back. The Lions traded up for him because they loved him, the defense he played in, like what he could do in it so much. And that obviously worked out. I think the Lions would strongly, strongly consider that again for Terry and Arnold as a, he's a dog. I mean, he's just a dog. He's great in man coverage, which is what they want to play. They were a little inhibited with their scheme, you know, Verstilli last year with what they wanted to do because of the personnel they had and the obvious struggles at corner that we just don't have to get into. Terry and Arnold would allow you to go back to that man coverage, that aggressive man that you want to play. I don't think he allowed a touchdown last year in man coverage, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, in the end though, Ben, I think the thing that I really thought about was Brad Holmes talking about the Super Bowl window thing and how he doesn't draft for the window. It's always what's best for the near and long term in equal measure. And look what he did on day two last year with Sam Laporta, with Brian Branch. Like, these are the kind of players you're missing out on if you trade up for Terry and Arnold. And I love Terry and Arnold. I love the fit. I love it so much. I spent hours thinking about it. But in the end, I just don't know if giving away the chips in a year where you have fewer chips to play with is really the way they'll go. When they traded up for Jameson Williams, they had an extra first round pick to play with. When they wanted to trade up for Jahmyr Gibbs, they had an extra first round pick to play with. They don't have that this year. And in fact, they have late selections in each of the rounds. They don't have a fourth round pick at all. I think it's more likely in the end they trade down out of the first round, perhaps with a quarterback driven kind of thing with Las Vegas or Denver or somebody like that, than it is that they trade up. But I think they will be enticed if a guy like Terry Arnold is there.
Yeah, I got Arnold at 15 in mine too. If a Mitchell or an Arnold fall, like, and if it's a reasonable situation, those are guys I would trade up for. But I'm with you too. I lean trade down too. I just didn't. I would have loved to turn in a mock draft where I trade out of the Lions pick and publish that mock draft for M Live and see the replies back. No first round pick, but but I do think, like, if a Bo Nix or a Michael Penix is still there at pick 29, the Lions should be calling all those quarterback needy teams. You need to be calling the Broncos. You need to be calling the Raiders. You need to be calling anybody and everybody that might want or need a quarterback, because if, like you said perfectly, if you can trade back down and get a couple picks in that 30 to 60 range, then you can start thinking about a Darius Robinson. Then you can start thinking about a wide receiver. Then you can start looking at those cornerbacks that might fall into day two, where you're hitting your needs and while cashing in on the value and adding more. So yeah, Brad Holmes, the wild card, baby. I can't wait to see what he's got in store for us, but I do feel like a first round trade. I mean, he's kept that baby on the table hard. So it's a strong possibility either way. No doubt about it.
Another day two name that I think pops for me, and it's the kind of guy you'd miss out on likely if you traded up the board, Enos Rakestraw, the corner out of Missouri. I think he's an excellent fit culturally and play style wise for what they want to do. He's a physical guy. He's not built that strong, but when you watch his tape, which I did around the combine time, quite a lot, the dude hits hard. There's one play where he's engaged with some guy and the quarterback throws the pass and he puts one mitt up in the air, deflects the pass, and then catches it for an interception. You know, he's a physical guy. He kind of reminds me in some ways of a Brian Branch. He just plays on the outside. I think that's a good fit. I just think he hasn't tested well during the pre-draft process. He's fallen a little bit. I don't really see him in many too many first rounds anymore. I think he's pretty firmly a day two kind of guy, along with the Darius Robinson, both guys from Missouri. And I think both guys who would be excellent fits for Detroit and are more examples of why, for as much as I want them to trade for Terry Arnold and think they could, again, if he falls enough, that's the opportunity cost, is these kind of guys like a Brian Branch or a Sam Laporta that you got last year who are now dogs for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Rakestraw, that's a classic Brad Holmes target too. I mean, as long as Brad feels comfortable about the game speed, the play speed, he's not going to give a crap about the RAS or what he ran in Indianapolis. So I do think that is a potential Brad Holmes kind of target for sure. And man, if you can get Exactly. I mean, he has fallen out of first rounds just because of that testing. That just makes my Brad Holmes census go off right there.
So we're about 35 minutes here, Ben, as we record this, and I have to run downtown.
Yeah.
We talked to our man, Jared Goff. So I think that's what we got for right now. But good stuff, man. I'm excited for the first round to kick off. This is the fun part. It's a lot of work, though. We've done a lot of work to this point, and yeah, it's kind of exciting to now kind of be putting to bed our pre-draft coverage and getting on to the real thing.
Yeah, we might get to kick back and watch a little of the first round thanks to that 29th pick.
It's going to be a very, very late night. What's up, Jared? How you doing, my man?
Yep.
Good to see you. I guess I'm curious, 3 years in here in Detroit, I know that you said recently you thought you were getting sent to Detroit to die and that kind of thing.
I didn't think that. People thought that.
People thought that. I got you. But that being said, I'm just curious, what about Detroit maybe has surprised you and just kind of love that you feel?
Yeah,
coming from fans.
The fans have been incredible, obviously, and I think this past year being able to give them a bite of that, reward of that, like what it tastes like to win and to win playoff games and to win home playoff games for them, and to be a part of that, for me, has been so special and so rewarding, and
yeah,
to see them enjoy it. And it's been, awesome. And I just want to give them more winning. I just want to keep winning. And it's not easy. It's a lot of hard work, and I think they appreciate that. But at the same time, I appreciate when they're hard on us. I do.
Yeah.
When they care. They're passionate, and we realize that passion isn't one-sided, and it's hard for us to continue to earn that.
Do you feel that when you go out into public? I mean, you're a pretty recognizable guy. You go to the grocery store, you fill up your car with gas. I mean, are you getting hit by fans?
Here and there. I get a lot more Detroit fans, obviously, than LA fans. But I, the major sentiment that's kind of blown me away in the offseason is the amount of people that have just been very thankful. And I've never experienced that before. Obviously, they're fans. Obviously, hey, good job, good luck next season. But a lot of people are, saying thank you for giving us something or being a part of something that we haven't experienced. And it was never my goal to receive thanks. I mean, we're just out there playing football, but that's been really cool and special, and something I don't take for granted.
How is that different than what you experienced at in LA?
You can only imagine. It's a ton different. Those fans are great too. It's just different. Yeah. The passion isn't quite as intense as it is here, and I think the people here just care so much. They're very passionate. They care. They love their football. They love all their sports. So they love the Wings, Pistons, Tigers, all of it. And I think being able to be a part of that for me, and to be able to provide some of the happiness for them has been a lot of fun.
You've been asked about the Jared Goff chance, but I've never seen anything like it. I know you've said before you've never seen anything like it, but I guess what's that like? Is it humbling? Is it on some level embarrassing for you? People are chanting your name in grocery stores and high school soccer games.
It's very humbling. It's very humbling. It's very surreal. It's obviously during those games, it was very surreal. And even in the NFC Championship, it was happening on the road, and I was like, "Am I actually talking?"
In San Francisco.
Yeah, and I could hear it from the field. And again, it's humbling. It's very cool. I appreciate their support.
Yeah.
And it's been cool. I don't know how long it'll last.
But yeah.
It's been cool to experience, and something I'll probably never experience again.
Have you? We're downtown Detroit right now, just a couple of blocks from Campus Martius, where they'll have the first round of the draft. Have you given any thought to what it might be like to hear your name chanted? Goodell's up there, or Caleb Williams is getting his name called.
I've not thought about what that would be like. I have not.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
do whatever you guys want, Detroit fans. They've been awesome, and whatever.
Detroit's buzzing right now, obviously, with the draft. I'm sure you've felt it. It means a lot to this town.
Yeah.
I'm curious what your draft experience was like, draft week, draft night. I mean, just what do you remember from
that experience of going first overall?
I remember it was a wild whirlwind experience. It happened so fast, and I had a pretty good idea I was going to get drafted first, but even so, you get drafted and then you're whisked away for, you know, 3 or 4 hours doing the media, and then you see your family, and it's kind of all happens really quickly within, you know, a few hours, and the next couple of weeks are quite the whirlwind. So it was fun, though. It was really cool, something I'll never forget. Quite the experience, and my family and I will remember forever.
When you go through the draft process in Detroit, you know, I know you're pretty involved with the creation of the offense, the game plans and all that. I'm curious, when they go through the draft, are you consulted at all? Are you involved at all in the process?
No. I don't know. They know what I want, but I'm not
receiver.
Yeah, I'm not looking for them to please me. Yeah. You know, I know they've got a job to do for the whole team, and I trust the hell out of Brad and Dan, and Brad's process in particular with the way that he dives into these draft prospects, and him and the whole staff up there. There's a ton of people that aren't even, you know, in the public that do so much work on everything, and trust the hell out of it.
Last one I got for you. When the draft picks got in town last year, and you see Jahmyr Gibbs and you see Sam LaPorta, I'm curious your first impressions of those guys, and I guess at what point did you realize how special, I guess, they were?
Both of them I knew the first day I saw them. Both of them. You never know, like, mentally how quickly they'll pick things up. I think that's the piece that is kind of the X factor, and they both were really quick at that. Yeah. But physically, they won. Like, they're both special and have long, you know, successful careers ahead of them if they continue to keep going at this pace.
It was crazy with Sam, too, right? Because that's such a difficult position. He comes in, you know, first full squad stuff, and he's, like, right there with Amon-Ra throughout the summer. It's like, man, this kid's okay.
Really good. Yeah. Really good. We're lucky to have him.
Jared, thank you very much.
Thank you so
good
much.
To see you.
Yeah. Good to see you.
Likewise. I'll see you soon.
All right.